It's Bill here until 2, and it's time to talk to Fevzi Turkel, the gadget detective. He's our guest every week at about this time. Don't forget, you can find him on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. And if you want to listen to his podcast, you can subscribe for free at gadgetdetective.com or listen on Alexa, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. Hi, Fevzi.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you with us. Now, your stories of the week are of sometimes really profound and shocking and give us great concern about what kind of a world we're creating. And that needs to be addressed. But it's nice occasionally to sort of just have something a bit more, I don't know, almost nostalgic or sweet. And today's story is quite a sweet one because what was once the cutting edge of technology has basically been usurped and is on its way out. Tell everyone.
Yes, so Apple has announced that it's discontinuing the iPod. That's after 21 years. Yeah. So I thought it was worth covering because the iPod is probably one of the most iconic gadgets of the 21st century, easily. I mean, even the shape, you know, if you just draw a box within a box and then a circle underneath it, you know, a remarkable percentage of the world's population will recognize that as an iPod.
Yep,
and I say of the 21st century because it actually launched in 2001. So it's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. And having said that, hasn't been updated since 2019. The iPod Touch, which is the latest one, was launched, I think, in 2007.
So that kind of told you the writing was on the wall, did it?
Well, yes, because an iPod Touch was essentially a low-powered iPhone without the same wireless connectivity, so you couldn't make calls on it. But it had a screen and a touch interface. And it's not so much that the iPod is dead, it's just that it's been swallowed into the iPhone. You know, the full functionality of an iPod is within the modern iPhone. So there's that. And, you know, if you're going to put the money into, you know, a nice touch screen and large capacity storage and some form of connectivity, be it Wi-Fi or what have you, you've got most of the gubbins of the iPhone there, and it was running iOS. So it kind of didn't really justify its existence anymore. That plus the fact that the big deal about the iPod when it was launched, when the late Steve Jobs launched it in 2001, the big deal was 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal, right? Because prior to that, there were MP3 players, but none of them were very ubiquitous. And, you know, the last iconic similar gadget was a Sony Walkman from the late 70s. So possibly early 80s, I think. Yeah, I saw one in 79. And it was a big deal, you know, the ability to carry your whole, in quotes, record collection in your pocket was amazing. But the other thing that's changed, so the iPod was really, it brought about the concept of music not being stored on a physical medium. So it wasn't a record, it wasn't a cassette. You know, it sort of lived in digital form inside our devices, and it didn't have to have, you know, something that you went and bought from a shop. So that was a big deal. Maybe we'll talk about that in a moment. But the thing that's changed since then is that fewer and fewer people are storing their music collections, and more of them are subscribing to huge libraries of music where you can stream anything you want, either because you request it by name, or it looks at what you listen to and makes suggestions of other music that it thinks you'll like. And, you know, the YouTube Music algorithm for that is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it summons up songs I'd forgotten about and others I didn't know that I would like and never heard of, but actually is very much my cup of tea. So, again, this need to store the music on a device is sort of largely going away, I think.
Yeah, see, I'd be inclined, because I'm old, to have thought 1,000 tracks was plenty. But here you are telling me, of course, that I would not only benefit by hearing more tracks, but tracks I don't even know about and which I then end up liking. So that is a powerful argument. Do you suppose because that they're going to stop making them soon? I mean, well, while stocks last is the phrase they're using.
Yeah.
Does that mean that they'll be dirt cheap because they're over now, or do you think the price will go up because
there's been a rush? Yeah, so there's been
a rush
on buying. Yeah, so certain SKUs are already out of stock. If you have an iPod, you should consider finding it and selling it on a, you know, well-known auction website or other, because there are, you know, there's a lot of interest in them now, and they're great. I've got an original iPod, which was the U2 version, you know, the not the military U2, but the band, and it has their signatures on it, and it was, you know, very stylish and all that.
Nice.
And it came with a U2 album on it. Yeah, I shall be selling my. I know the early ones, by the way, had internal hard drives, actually physically little rotating micro hard drives in them.
How much do you think that's going to be worth then? That you're flogging?
I'm not sure. I haven't looked it up yet, but I'm hoping
quite a lot. I would have thought, yeah.
Yeah, hundreds. And I've also got a mixer that it's a small 4-channel mixer. I'm not trying to sell it, but I'm just sharing this with you.
You're keeping this
it's
one.
It's not made by Apple, but it's a small 4-channel mixer where you plug in the iPod and you could record the mix output onto the iPod. So it was before we had like memory cards and USB sticks.
Oh,
and
I was
like
going to say, why would you want to do that? Now I get it. Yes.
Yeah,
of course
it's off that, and it's kind of fun because you've got this 4-channel mixer and an iPod sticking out of it, and it's great. It was a great piece of design, and also interesting because it means when Apple was perhaps a more confident and innovative company than arguably it is now, it showed that it wasn't afraid to cannibalize its some of its best-selling products with new products.
Mm-hmm.
And the iPhone completely made the iPod irrelevant. It was a very narrow use case for people that it made sense for them to buy an iPod and not something else.
One other thought, of course this happened to vinyl records and CDs and cassettes, and now there is a market for them again. Even cassettes, which always amazes me because the quality was shocking, as opposed to vinyl where the quality was very nice. I mean, of course, they could scratch and jump, but there was that wonderful warmth, that wonderful sort of special tone to them. And then CDs were pretty reliable, so that there was a case for at least those two forms. And sure enough, there is a market again now. So if we don't make a quick killing by selling our iPod, should we hold on to them and suddenly they'll be the bee's knees again, in a decade's time, 20 years' time, possibly?
Yeah, the thing is, you're talking about a player rather than a format, because there's no physical format here.
Mm.
So, whereas vinyl has made a comeback, and there's good reasons for that, and people like analog, and we can have that discussion. But here we're talking about a player, not a format. And the problem is that the electronics gets older, the capacitors will start leaking, the screens will start dimming. They kind of need a degree of maintenance, these things, as well. I can't give people sort of financial advice.
No, of course.
They may go up in value, but the thing is, they may die on you as well.
I think I hear what you're saying, even though you can't give financial advice, right? It's fascinating, though, and God bless them. They were a massive, new, incredible thing in the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I remember my father used to use. It wasn't.
Well, he was a trendy dad, wasn't he? Right.
Well, he wasn't particularly. That's the thing. He wasn't a computer user and all of this. He was. Of his generation, let's say, and a very bright man. But he loved it. He used to listen in bed. He loved it.
Yeah. That was great.
And once you showed him how to use it, and it wasn't hard, and that's the whole thing. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to have a computer. One other thing, just briefly, very quickly, to say about this. At the time when the iPod was released, the record industry was in a disastrous position because people kept downloading free music from illegal file-sharing websites. And more or less coincident with the launch of the iPod was the launch of Apple's iTunes Music Store, where the music industry complained on the one hand because the money they made was nowhere near, when they used to sell a CD for £15 and the artist would get a good cut, it was nowhere near that. But on the other hand, it kind of put pay, because of the convenience of it, as well as the legality of it, it put pay to a lot of those illegal file sharing services as well. So you could say it saved and killed the music industry all at the same time.
This has been fascinating. We must have a song, and then we must do your gadget of the week. It's Bill Buckley with you. Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, is here as well. And here comes his gadget of the week, and it's the Pocket Talk S Plus. What is that?
Yes, so it's a Pocket handheld translator. I would just say, but for people who want to look this up online, Pocket Talk is one word with only one T in the middle.
Yes.
So the end of Pocket and the beginning of Talk is served by a single T. Otherwise, you will not find it. So the Pocket Talk S Plus, it's a handheld language translator. It supports, I think, more than 82 languages now.
Cool.
And it works in a variety of ways. So it looks like a little mobile phone. In fact, the hardware of it is essentially the gubbins of a small mobile phone. Although the plus in the name S Plus indicates that it's the bigger model. There is one that's smaller, but that has a smaller screen and a smaller battery life. So although it's good if you want the ultimate in pocketability, this is still quite small. And gives you a screen that, so when it translates, it can translate it into text on the screen and or speech. So if you want to be conversing with someone that you're, you know, close to, but let's say because of COVID, you don't want to stand quite so close to them.
Right,
you know,
the
bigger screen and holding it up and the louder speaker is actually quite beneficial. So it can work in various ways. You can speak into it and then it can translate that into text in another language and also speak it out in the other language. It's also got a camera, so you can use it for things like road signs, menus, any sort of text. It will even do handwriting at a push. My handwriting, I guess. It is really, you know, quite a versatile device. And the thing I like about it as well, when you think about it in terms of travel, is it's got a built-in global SIM with 2 years of data already paid for within it. The global SIM is supported in, I think, 132 countries. So this service requires data in which to work. It's not like everything is just crammed into the memory of the device, you know, 82 languages. Plus, they keep adding to the number of languages and the features. And so the way it works is it has to be able to access the internet. But with the SIM, you don't have to worry. You know, now, you know, especially now we're not in the European Union, when we go abroad, we can be subject to roaming charges for data, and some of those can be quite frightening now again. A lot of us just turn off the data on our mobile devices to make sure that we don't accidentally get, you know, what they call bill shock.
Yeah.
Nothing personal. When
I was going to say,
but,
we should have meant a new name for that, but never mind.
I know. But so this one still, having this as, you know, the data connection in a separate device allows you still to turn off your data if you wish to and not worry about it. You're never going to be charged for data within the first 2 years. And then it's got its own SIM slot. So after the 2 years, you can pop in another SIM card. And it connects via Wi-Fi as well. So it will carry on working. But what I liked about it, because a lot of this functionality can be replicated by apps on your smartphone. And it's hard to make an exhaustive comparison, particularly because I don't speak 82 languages. But, you know, from the languages that I have some smattering of, plus others who speak them better than I do, the conclusion that I came to was that this device is particularly strong on sentences which are other than very basic, so quite complex sentences and paragraphs even.
Right.
I was reading it passages from books. And it was doing quite a good job of a grammatically correct translation. It's never going to be perfect, well, it will be, but not yet. But I thought it was better than, say, Google Translate.
Well, you've taken the words out of my mouth, because I was going to ask you, is it really any good? Because, you know, the hilarity one can get with hitting the see translation bit on Facebook, you know, it's hopeless sometimes. You know perfectly well the person couldn't have meant this stream of drivel that comes your way. But this is obviously well above that then. That's good.
Well, it reminds me of that the Monty Python sketch where I think it's a Hungarian gentleman played by John Cleese walks into a store and he's got this translation book, and it's got malicious translations in it, and he gets beaten up and arrested because he says rude things by accident. Well, no, I think this is better, and I think it is for particular use cases. It is worth the money. This is not for everybody because this thing is about £300, right? So that's a fair chunk of money. But when you consider that you've got a 2-year data contract contained within that, I think that's a fair price. I do think it can be worthwhile. It does particularly well. I liked it for a couple of reasons, and I was was talking to your producer just before about the fact that I think Berkshire's now got about 500 Ukrainians in it that it didn't have a short while ago.
That's exactly the example producer Catherine and I were talking about earlier when we knew you were doing this.
So there's, you know, we come in, I mean, and in London, for example, 200 languages spoken in London, you know. But also I've seen it used very successfully in hospital settings and care settings where the patient may speak one language and the carers or the nurses may speak another language. And these are settings now where personal mobile phones are frowned upon because of the risk of COVID cross-infection and so forth. Personal devices have to be put away. But you can have this device, which is GDPR compliant, by the way, and it has this thing. So let's say you're going from patient to patient. You can set it to, after a certain period of time, to delete the translations previously to try and preserve the privacy from patient to patient. So I think that something like that is great, and the fact that it will do it, you know, completely, voice bound, if you want to, it's very useful. So I've given it 3.5 stars, and the reason why I've given it 3.5 stars out of 5, which is still, you know, 70%, it's still good. But the reason I've done that is because, as I say, it's a particular set of use cases where this makes more sense than just putting an app on your phone. Okay. I also noticed on their website today that they're planning an app of their own. What you're paying for here is not the hardware. What you're paying for is the quality of that translation. And that's it. And if you do buy one, buy it from somewhere where you can return it if you're not happy.
Pocket Talk, all one word, pocketalk.com. Right, we'll do it in 7 days' time. Thank you so much for all of that, Fevzi. Have a good week.
Cheers.
That was your Gadget Detective.